call this meeting of the House Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:07 p.m. on Monday, March 13th, 2023. Present this afternoon, we have Representative Josephson, Representative Hannon, Representative Galvin, Representative Stapp, Representative Colomb, Representative Ortiz, Representative Kronk, Representative Tomaszewski, Co-Chair Edgman, Co-Chair Foster, myself, Co-Chair Johnson. We have assisting us today, the LAO moderator, Emma Turner, with the Finance Secretary, Bree Wiley. And this afternoon, we will continue our subcommittee closeout reports. First up, we have the Department of Fish and Game, followed by Judiciary, Department of Law, and Department of Natural Resources. And those will be presented by Representative Kronk, and he is already before us. Representative Kronk, when you're ready, go ahead and introduce your staff and begin your closeout reports.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Representative Mike Kronk and my staff, Sue Stancliffe. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Fish and Game held a total of 6 meetings. 2 items were modified from the governor's requested base budget to one-time increments and submits the following recommended operating budget for fiscal year 24 to the House Finance Committee. In fund sources, unrestricted general funds, $65,092,000. Designated general funds, $13,121,000. Other funds, $75,670,000. Federal funds, $88,577,000, for a total of $242,462,000. Compared to the fiscal year 24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent an increase of $3,462,000. It's a 5.6 increase. In unrestricted general funds, a decrease of $936,000, a 6.7% decrease in designated general funds, an increase of $9,021,000 in other state funds, which is a 13.5% increase, and a decrease of $45,000 in federal funds, for a total increase of $11,503,000, a 5% increase for all funds. Positions, permanent full-time, there are 819. Permanent part-time, there are 596. Temporary, there is 1, for a total of 1,416. After reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all items by unanimous consent. 2 items were modified from the base budget to one-time increments. Some of the highlights of these items are assessment and management projects for the Arctic, Yukon, Kuskokwim, Region Fisheries Management Area in the amount of $285,000 of general funds. Alleviate shortfall of crab test fishery receipts with a one-time increment of general funds in the amount of $1 million. Authorize wildlife conservation to the utilize fish and game fund with a one-time increment of $5 million. Authorize the state match for increased Pittman-Robertson funding with $2,080,000 of fish and game funds. The chair set an amendment deadline, welcomed amendments from all members, and the committee received 2 amendments. Neither were adopted. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Fish and Game adopted the attached reports. DFG agency totals, DFG transaction compare, adjusted base, plus House Subcommittee, DFG transaction compare, 24 governor amend to House Subcommittee, DFG wordage. And with that.
All right, thank you. We have, thank you for the presentation. Would you like to go through the 4 items on the highlights and just say, give a little bit more about what those changes are and what they do?
Through the chair. To the chair, Representative Johnson, the 4 items on there, the assessment, I'm sorry, Sue Stancliffe for the record, the assessment and management projects for the AYK region fisheries management, that is for the assessment over the past 8 years, the division's reduced numerous assessments in the management projects and At this time, those were treated as short-term reductions. Over time, the division is left with increasingly less accurate information to the efficiency and management of fisheries. The alleviating the shortfall with the crab test fisheries, they have we made this a one-time increment. They had a shortfall and were unable to realize, so they, in order to continue the test fishery, they needed to have that increment, and I'm looking for my comment here, and I'm not seeing it.
Was that a request from the department?
From the department.
These were governor's request, also governor's request.
And I'll chime in here. Basically, with the crash of the crab, you know, when they do the test fisheries, they can bring those in and actually sell those to recover the cost. So without that, this is why they're asking for that.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. And through the chair, Sue Stancliffe again, authorizing the wildlife conservation to use the Fish and Game Fund with a one-time increment of $5 million. Again, this was in the governor's budget. And
the governor's amended budget?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
But we chose to, the subcommittee chose to make that a one-time increment. And then authorizing the match for the increased Pittman-Robertson funding of $2,080,000 of Fish and Game Fund. We don't want to leave those Pittman-Robertson funds on the table. Therefore, we're requesting to use them.
Very good. And I think we have a couple of questions. I see Representative Ortiz, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, under the category of other funds, I sat in on that committee. Remind me what goes into, quote, other funds. Is that the test fisheries and things like that that generates revenue for the department? Is that what those are?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the other funds are, yes, they are the, I'm looking at the agency totals in the governor's structure, and the other funds are the state designated receipts. They make up general funds, IA receipts. There is the fish and game, state designated test fisheries, also CFEC receipts.
Thank you. And one.
Just to clarify, Madam Chair, if I may, that these changes are not changes to the governor's budget, okay, other than, of course, the one time.
Yes, okay, very good.
And one more question, Madam Chair, if I may.
One more question.
Down under the positions numbers, do you recall, is that total a number that's remained consistent from the previous year's budget, or has it gone up, or has it gone down in terms of positions?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, it is consistent.
Consistent. Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Ms. Stancliffe, can you give me a little more information on that wildlife conservation $5 million switching to one-time monies? The closeout says the proposal from the governor was to maintain prior level authorization, and I'm just curious as to whether we think this really is just 1 year of operating in there and the next year we won't need it, or were there specific projects running out? And yeah, a little more information.
Certainly, through the chair, Representative Hannon, what I have the information on this was that in FY23, the legislature considered replacing $5 million of Fish and Game Fund authority with a one-time increment of UGF. The fund source was later changed back to Fish and Game Fund, but retained a one-time increment. Governor's budget maintains this, the Fish and Game Fund authority. So we, being our first year at looking at this budget, wanted to maintain that one time so we could reevaluate it next year. It's had some flexibility, and so we want to take a look at it.
One follow-up? Can you tell me, is it an expectation that they would use that $5 million all in the current, in the upcoming fiscal year? Is it designed in projects to be used in one fiscal year?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that's a very good question, and I'll have to get back with you.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions from our committee members? I see none, no more, so
Representative Prompt. I wanted to add, and we really had some great conversation through the subcommittee process, and we probably as a collective state have a lot of concerns with this department. Obviously, the Alaska, the Arctic Yukon, the Yukon and Kuskokwim fish runs are of dire concern. Crashes in the crab stock, bycatch waste. We have enforcement issues in the commercial fisheries, and these are all things that were brought up. And we obviously have one of our ships, the Pandalus, which does a lot of research that is now done. So, and that is going to be a capital budget issue, but I just wanted to make sure we got that on the record that there's a lot of issues here, and we're hoping that, with this budget, you know, Fishing Game will continue addressing all these issues. Thank you.
Yes, and thank you. I know you had a lot of subcommittees, and we're going to get to them all. But thank you for the time that you particularly spent on Fish and Game, and well, a couple other departments as well. Okay, so next up, we will now move to Judiciary. Representative Prank, when you're ready, go ahead and
Madam Co-Chair. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Judiciary held a total of 4 meetings and submits the following recommended operating budget for fiscal year 24 to the House Finance Committee. Fund source. Unrestricted general funds is $136,212,000. Designated general funds, $518,000. Other funds, $2,531,000. Federal funds, $1,280,000. Is a total of $140,542,000. Compared to the fiscal year adjusted budget or base, the subcommittee recommendations represent an increase of $2,260,000 in unrestricted general funds, $280,000 in other funds, $304,000 in federal funds, for a total of $2,845,000, for a total increase of 2% of all funds. Positions, permanent full-time, there are 748 positions. Permanent part-time, there are 39. Temporary, there are 5, and there's a total of 792.
I also wanted to make note that we have our finance director, Alexi Painter, in the room. If you need to call for a lifeline, I believe we also have a representative here from the court system, Doug Walliver, as well, if there's anything additional that you might want to call on.
Thank you. Budget actions. After reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all items by unanimous consent. Some of the highlights of these items are standing master magistrate judge to handle cases in Palmer. That's $294,000 UGF. Replace $10,586,000 of general funds with $10,586,000 of coronavirus state and local recovery funds within ARPA. Replace $250,000 of state designated receipt funds with $250,000 of federal receipts. The chair set an amendment deadline. Welcome amendments from all members. The committee received no amendments. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Judiciary adopted the attached reports. Judiciary agency totals, judiciary transaction compare, adjusted base plus to the House Subcommittee.
Question?
Yes, Representative Co-Chair.
Yeah, just a technical question. I've always known this to be the courts. Now, is this the first time we've done the title of Judiciary, or is that something that I've just not seen in prior years?
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, I all along was referring to it as courts because I did, but in the ledge finance reports, everything is under the judiciary and referred to as a judiciary, so I have adopted it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I figured as such and just wanted to make sure it was the courts.
I think we have Representative Hannon followed by Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I have a question about the adding the judge in Palmer, and I want to know if we already have an existing courtroom and whether any of those costs are affiliated with placing that magistrate judge there. Are they one-time costs, or is that going to be the permanent ongoing cost of, and I don't know, because I know that maybe we've cut one previously, or but is there a courtroom they operate out of, and are they, that's what the base to add a judge is?
Thank you, Representative Hannah. Through the chair, I would like to throw our lifeline at with Mr. Willover.
Yes, very good, Mr. Willover.
Good afternoon, Chair Johnson, members of the committee. I'm Doug Willover, Deputy Administrative Director for the Alaska Court System. Representative Hannah, we won't be needing a new courtroom for this particular magistrate judge, although last year the legislature gave us design funding for a remodel of the Palmer Courthouse, which is currently underway. We hope to come back here either next year or the following year for an expansion of that court to make additional room for additional judicial officers. And I believe some of that funding, I'd have to double check, but I believe some of that funding is one time, like the computers and things like that. But I'd have to check to see how that breaks down.
You have one follow-up?
Follow-up.
How many judges do we currently, and by adding one, do we anticipate that we'll need to add additional support staff, once they're up and running and getting a full caseload?
Representative Hannon, we, through the chair, it does include one additional support staff. That is included in this appropriation.
Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Under some of the highlights of these items are the second bullet down replaced $10,586,000 GF with coronavirus funds and ARPA funds. Can we assume that this is a one-time savings of GF and that the $10 million will reappear under GF in the following budget cycle? Or so are we using up the remaining coronavirus and ARPA funds for this 1 year?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I believe that to be the case. We could confer with Ledge Finance, but that would be my understanding, is that we're utilizing ARPA funds, the remaining amounts.
It's good enough.
Would you like to invite?
They're shaking their head. Yes.
Oh, okay.
I'm assuming I'm correct. Thank you.
All right. Any additional questions for our courts / judiciary subcommittee? Seeing none, thank you very much. Representative Tronc, we will now move to the Department of Law. Representative Tronc.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Law held a total of 4 meetings and submits the following recommended operating budget for fiscal year 24 to the House Finance Committee. Fund source: unrestricted general funds, $68,893,000. Designated general funds, $2,900,000. Other funds, $33,613,000. Federal funds, $2,244,000. For a total of $107,652,000. Compared to the fiscal year 24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent an increase of $1,561,000 in unrestricted general funds for a total increase of 1.5% of all funds. Positions, they're permanent full-time, 555, with a total of 555. After reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all items by unanimous consent. Some of the highlights of these items are software and storage for audio-visual evidence in criminal cases, which is $400,000 UGF. Expand internet connectivity for rural prosecution offices, $350,000 UGF. This is a one-time increment. A criminal investigator for election fraud, rural homicide, felony sex offense, other violent crimes, $143,000 UGF. Added attorney to specialize and lead on tribal law issues, $209,000 UGF. Added attorney for parental rights and education advocate, $209,000 UGF. The chairman set an amendment deadline, welcomed amendments from all members. The subcommittee received two amendments. Neither were adopted. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Law adopted the attached reports. Law agency totals, law transaction compare, adjusted base plus to the House Subcommittee, law wordage.
Thank you, Chair.
Representative Josephson.
Through the Chair. Representative Kronk, the two amendments concerned the election fraud position and the parental rights position. And you've noted here that there was unanimous consent. Perhaps in the final analysis, when those amendments were defeated, there was effectively unanimous consent. But am I right that minority members opposed those positions?
Representative Jensen, you were correct.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for that. Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, through the Chair. This is just for my own clarification. I know that this body's been asked to consider $10 million increment for statehood defense. Is that a capital budget item, and is that not something you dealt with in the subcommittee, or can you elaborate a bit on that?
Representative Ortiz, I believe that is in the capital budget, so we didn't discuss this.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, through the Chair. I understand that one of the amendments was related to an investigator who had two roles. One was elections, and the other one was felony sex offense. And I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around that. So the idea was that an expert would be hired for both of those, and they work in the court system. As opposed to somehow working in, you know, the Department of somehow related to corrections or to the public safety. I was just wondering if there's some discussion around that, like how that came to be that this one position would be rolled in under Department of Law.
Through the Chair, Representative Galvin. The position for elections is they estimate to be about 25% use of the time because election cycles are every 2 years. So to use them in other periods of time, they would use them in rural investigations for homicide, sexual assault, and other crimes to fill that.
Thank you. A follow-up? So apparently there was no concern that you'd be able to find someone with that special talent of knowing about elections and going into rural Alaska and working on specific criminal cases. That's
through the Chair, Representative Galvin. The discussion around it was that they were looking primarily at perhaps a retired state trooper who had the background in investigation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Very good. Any additional questions on the Department of Law?
Chair Johnson.
Oh, I guess we do. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Can you tell me, does the Department of Law have other investigators for specific areas of crime, or do we generally depend on the Department of Public Safety for the investigations of crimes? Would this be the first time that law has its own independent of public safety investigator?
Through the Chair, Representative Hannon, that is correct. This is something new for the Department of Law, is to have an investigator in there. And primarily it started because of Division of Elections. Elections, you know, people have problems with, if there's a specific problem with an election and they call the Department of Law, they can't really call the troopers to investigate it. It's not a high enough priority for them. And so it made sense to house it in the Department of Law.
One follow-up?
Follow-up.
Did the Department of Law then describe when that person in the 75% duties that were sex crimes and ongoing problems that public safety is frequently doing, do they switch hats? I mean, when they switch hats and aren't doing election fraud, are they then reporting to the Department of Public Safety or would we have an independent investigator investigating crimes that public safety is also investigating?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, no. Or Representative Hannon, apologies. No, they would not. They would stay in the Department of Law and focusing on those crimes that are already being investigated, perhaps looking further at the cases that are there, what evidence there is. I don't know the specific details, but we were, you know, made aware that they would not be going anywhere other than in the Department of Law.
Okay. So I just wanted to make note that we had this conversation when the department was before us. We did talk about this to a certain extent, as I recall. And I don't want to put our subcommittee chairs in the position of having to answer for the department, but I do appreciate your questions.
Yeah. I was just looking to see if they had a fuller answer at the subcommittee level than when we heard it introduced. Thank you.
Yeah. Very good.
Yes. Thank you. It's, you know, this budgeting process is really interesting because the operating budget, it's a mammoth document, and there's just no way we can be experts on sort of every different items. But there are also, you know, I've seen over the years, and I'm seeing a couple here in front of me, budget items that have policy implications. And one is the maybe not so much as what was just mentioned, the election fraud. And I think back to a few days ago when the Division of Elections director, the new director, basically said there was no evidence of fraud in Alaska. But the presentation we got basically was built around election fraud. And then the other item sort of added into it from the Department of Law. The other item, and I'm remiss for not maybe bringing this up with law, it didn't really catch my attention, is the last item where it says added attorney for parental rights and education advocates, $209,000. It's a very controversial issue, extremely controversial issue. And that's not been in the budget that I know of in the past. I was here when Bree's law was passed, Aaron's law in 2016. And I think that legislation called for something like that, an investigator. And now it suddenly appears, along with other legislation from the governor. And it's not, again, I agree, Madam Co-Chair, the purview of the subcommittee to make any grand pronouncements vis-a-vis what I'm opining on here. But it's just that these are big-ticket items that, you know, I think are going to engender a lot of discussion as we go through the budget process and probably in the other body as well. And I'll leave it at that for now. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Josephson.
But just very, very briefly, under general dialogue, if I might, the concern I share with Representative Edgeman is that the governor, I wasn't at his press conference, but the way it was reported is that parents needed help to know how to sue their districts. I believe he must have said that unless the journalist was wildly wrong, and that concerns me. But we can take that up in full finance. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Any additional comments before we move on?
Madam Co-Chair, I'd like
to... Yeah, if you would like to do a little wrap-up.
The election fraud was brought up, and I believe Mr. Skidmore was there, and there are more and more cases popping up. And like, I think my comment was, whether it's one case or 25 cases, it's still important to somebody. So I'm kind of glad we have that there. And if parental rights, as a teacher, a retired teacher, I don't think there's anything more important than parental rights. So even though this may seem political, and I understand that, but I do believe that, you know, the parents need to have a voice. And if this is something that's going to help them alleviate some of the issues, I will probably be supporting that. But I do understand that it is it could be a political issue on both sides. So thank you guys for your comments because they are appreciated.
Very good. Are you ready to move on to the Department of Natural Resources? When are you going to be finished with your list? You did a lot of subcommittees. You did a lot of work. So moving on to Department of Natural Resources, Representative Karak, when you're ready, please begin.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the
Department of Natural Resources held a total of 4 meetings and submits the following recommended operating budget for fiscal year 24 to the House Finance Committee. Recommendations, fund source, unrestricted general funds, $72,611,000. Designated general funds, $43,890,000. Other funds, $41,077,000. Federal funds, $18,430,000. For a total of $176,009,000. Compared to the fiscal year 24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent no increase in unrestricted general funds, an increase of $504,000 in designated general funds, $1,419,000 in other state funds, and an increase of $300,000 in federal receipts for a total of $2,223,000. Positions, permanent full-time, there are 726. Permanent part-time, there are 230. Temporary, there are 58 for a total of 1,014. After reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all the items by unanimous consent. Some of the highlights of these items are authorized continued funding of positions created in fiscal year 22 for processing applications for mining permits and hard rock exploration support. That was $231,000 of DGF. Increased capital receipt authority, CIP and force management and development, $360,000. Funded park maintenance and concessionaire incentives for Chena River, Big Lake North, Big Lake South, and Rocky Lake, $100,000 general fund. Accepted the enhanced federal support for the boating safety program of $300,000 federal receipts. The chair set an amendment deadline. Welcomed amendments from all members. The committee received one amendment. The amendment was not adopted. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Natural Resources adopted the attached reports. DNR agency totals, DNR transaction compare, adjusted base, plus to the House subcommittee, DNR wordage.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. My question has to do with the additional park maintenance, because in the BA sheets, those two parks, I guess, $100,000 in your budget action items, it's $100,000 for concessionaire incentives for those same parks, then $272,000 for general maintenance. And I am curious whether any other state parks needed additional maintenance. Were these especially over budget or under maintained? And so it's $372,000 for those four parks, and whether we had any details on how that was split out between them.
Representative Hand, I don't know all the details, but I do believe these were the parks that were shut down last year, and they're trying to figure out a way to get them back open because they're very highly used parks.
One follow-up. Representative Kronk and I served on the subcommittee as resource committee members when we had some dialogue about the parks, and one of the things that the parks were attempting to do over the last 4 years is, especially with the highly used ones, put them all into fee digital maintenance, digital fee payment, so that you could increase their usage with having lower staffing for them. Are these four parks, if they were shut down, are they already ones that we have that at, or do we have to hire concessionaires to reopen them and operate them?
Representative Hannon, I do not have that answer. I would hope they are doing that.
Thank you.
I can probably clarify a little bit there. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, the parks outsource operations in some of the park units to concessionaires, but the division does not provide funding to the concessionaires who generate revenue through the user fees. I'm reading from the ledge finance sheet. So, which is their explanation. These contracts are offered competitively through the department's procurement process. Big Lake North, Big Lake South, Rocky Lake have been contracted over a decade, but the department was unsuccessful in 3 recent attempts to find a concessionaire for these facilities. As a result, the division stepped in to operate these units assuming additional costs.
Brief at ease, ma'am. Brief at ease. House Finance back on the record. I think we do have someone that can speak to that.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. If we could invite Mr. Painter up to do a much better job of explaining that. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Mr. Painter.
For the record, Alexi Painter, Legislative Finance Division. I just wanted to clarify one thing, which is that, well, I guess two things. One is, the governor's original amendment was $100,000. The governor and the governor in GovAmend backed out the $100,000, replaced it with $272,800 for the same purpose. So the amount now is the $272,800, which the department says would reflect the actual expected cost rather than just a portion of them as the original item did. I think the other comments were accurate about the three were contracted previously, and then the other area had been contracted and then was moved back to the department and reopened last year.
Representative Hannah, did that?
I want to just clarify one thing with Mr.
One more thing, please.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. The original budget where it referenced concessionaire incentives is irrelevant because these are not going to be concession operated. They're going to be within state management because we couldn't find concessionaires.
Through the chair, Representative Hannah, yes, that's correct. So the original one would be to offer incentives, but they've been unsuccessful in finding concessionaires. The department plans to manage them themselves.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Galvin.
Just a point of clarification through the chair. I think you might have mentioned 272.8, and I'm looking at 172.4 plus the 100. So I just wanted to double check, is it 0.4 or 0.8?
Through the chair, Representative Gallen, I don't have it in front of me, so maybe
okay.
Maybe 0.4.
Okay, thank you. No worries.
All right, very good. Is there any additional? Oh, Representative Ortiz.
It'll be a quick one, thank you. Under the first bullet, some of the highlights of these items are, talks about authorized continued funding positions for permitting of mining permits, projects, et cetera. Was there any discussion in relationship in the subcommittee about understaffing for permitting of mariculture projects? Was that brought up at all?
Representative Ortiz, I don't recall.
Okay, fair enough. I think I'm correct in that, even though it seems strange, that does come under their purview, but I was wondering whether there was any discussion about that. So, and thank you.
All right. Seeing no additional questions, thank you, Mr. Painter.
I have a, could I add a?
Oh, and would you like to do
a? Just a little, yeah, a little close out.
I think that's your last one, so go ahead and finish up your final wrap-up.
Good. I won't take too long. I just want to thank everybody that was here last year for passing HB 209 because the Chena River Park had so many issues, and they actually used that bill to get the fire crew to go clean up the Chena River Park and open it back up and make it. So thank you guys all for supporting that bill last year because that actually came into play. Some of the issues, probably the biggest issue that we've had following the DNR subject, it has been forestry. And for most of Alaska, forestry is not a big dollar business. It doesn't bring in a lot of revenue to the state, but it's vital for our small community, especially in rural Alaska. And this was a perfect example of government keeping industry at bay. And we've been really working hard with the people. So I have some really, really high expectations. But one of our key things is, you know, we came back and asked for $60 million for fire money. When if we can start managing our forests, maybe we can reduce those costs down. So I'm hoping for a little bit more of an investment in the forestry. But I just want to make sure that everybody realizes how important forestry is for our smaller communities, whether it's rural Southeast or rural interior. It's vital, and the role it's going to play in keeping our, you know, the lower amount of fires, the better, especially around the places where everybody lives. So that was one of our highlights. And the governor and commissioner concur on making this an industry that can sustain itself with long-term sales. So I just want to leave with that.
Very good. And thank you for, again, doing so many different subcommittees and so many committees. I appreciate that. And we'll just take, I think next up we do have, we'll have the Department of Environmental Conservation, Department of Labor and Workforce Development, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, presented by Representative Thomas Chesky. Brief at ease. House Finance, back on the record. Representative Tomaszewski, welcome. When you're ready, go ahead and introduce anyone that's assisting with you and you, your staff, and make sure to put their names on the record. Don't forget, of course, that you have Legislative Finance in the room. And when you're ready, go ahead and begin your first closeout report, and that would be the Department of Environmental Conservation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the Chair, Frank Tomaszewski, for the record. And this is the DEC Finance Budget Subcommittee Narrative Report. And with me, I have my assistant staff, Katie McCall. And she is going to be giving the report for this subcommittee. Thanks.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. For the record, this is Katie McCall, staff to Representative Tomaszewski. So the House Finance Budget Subcommittee for the Department of Environmental Conservation held a total of 5 meetings, made no changes to the governor's request, and submits the following recommended operating budget for fiscal year 24 to the House Finance Committee. $26,551,500 of UGF, $22,223,600 DGF, that's designated general funds, $20,428,600 in other funds, $45,626,000 in federal funds, for a total of $114,829,700. Compared to the FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent an increase of $6,542,900 in UGF, unrestricted general funds, $250,000 in DGF, designated general funds, $5,700,100 in federal funds, along with a decrease of $297,800 in other funds, for an overall total increase of $12,195,200 for all funds. Positions for the department, there are 548 permanent full-time positions, 0 permanent part-time positions, 7 temporary positions, for a total of 555 positions. Budget action. After reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all items. Some of the highlights of these items are 10 new permanent full-time positions within the Division of Air Quality. That's a total of $1,564,700 UGF dollars. And of those 10, two permanent full-time positions are for air monitoring and quality assurance program for Rural Community Monitoring Network. And then eight of those positions are for federally required air quality state improvement plan development and regulatory required monitoring. There are also 28 new permanent full-time positions for assumption of primacy over Section 404 of the Clean Water Act, which has a cost of $4,965,300 UGF dollars. Subcommittee amendments. The chair set an amendment deadline, welcomed amendments from all members, and the committee received one amendment, which was not adopted. The attached reports you have today are the DEC agency totals, the transaction compare from adjusted base to the House subcommittee, along with the wordage. And that concludes the narrative report.
Is there any closing remarks that you would like? Well, first of all, I guess I don't see any. Maybe there are some questions. I guess I do see a couple of questions. They're popping up everywhere. Representative Hand and Representative Stapp, and I believe, Representative Hand and Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. My question is about the 404 assumption of the program. Was there any description or discussion of whether any other statutory changes have to be made, or is it simply a budget action item authorizes standing up this program that would initially have 28 technical staff added to it?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, as far as we heard in subcommittee, there's not statutory changes that are required. So under the Clean Water Act, there's a section that states the governor of any state desiring to administer its own individual and general permit program for the discharge of dredge or fill material into navigable waters within its jurisdiction may submit to the administrator a full and complete description of the program it proposes to establish and administer under state law. So those 28 positions would be able to look into all the things that the state would need to do, all the applications, and submit that to the federal government. So it's under the Clean Water Act that we have that authority to assume that program.
One follow-up.
Representative Hanner.
I'm curious as to whether the guidance, and again, subcommittee, so I'm not trying to grill you, but just trying to get information that DC may have provided you that we haven't heard. It's my understanding that the only other states that have done this also have coastal zone management authorities and processes, so they've already sort of got a structure when they then ask for 404 or exercise 404 authority, and I'm wondering if that was described at all by DEC, that we got to have some coastal zone management or we have to have coastal research versus we just, through a budget action item, can stand up a program and exercise it. So that's what I'm sort of looking to see from DEC.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, not that I'm aware of, and I can certainly check with the department and confirm that.
Thank you.
Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Ms. McCall. I'm just curious regarding the 10 new positions, Division of Air Quality. As you are probably aware, the EPA's made some stringent changes recently to how they measure particulates, including PM2.5. Currently, they're discussing reducing that even further. So I'm curious if the department was able to convey to you that these positions would effectively be able to resource our state in the event that we would have to have challenges dealing with the federal agency in the future. Thanks.
Thank you, Representative Staff, through the chair. So, big reason that, those of the 10 positions, 8 are for the state improvement plan. So a big reason they're bringing those forward is because the capacity they have right now is to manage one SIP, and they anticipate 3 that they're going to have to complete by 2026. And so they currently don't have the capacity to take that on. And those particulate air pollution levels are sort of the source of that.
Thank you.
Representative Josephson.
Chair, and for Ms. McCall, I think. To follow up on Representative Hannon's question, my memory is that when we took primacy over hazardous waste, that we passed a bill. But I could be wrong, number one. It's happened. And number two, just to hear you again, the committee was not advised that it needed any new legislation to adopt a pathway and assume for the 404 program, other than funding it.
Representative Josephson, through the chair, so my understanding is that those 28 positions will present a plan to the feds, and I think that if there was statutory changes that were required, it would come through the work that they would be doing over the course of the next year. But again, I can check with the department on that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I think I remember something similarly that was presented before the committee. All right. Well, very good. Seeing any additional questions on the Department of Environmental Conservation? Next up, we have Representative Tomaszewski presenting the Department of Labor and Workforce Development. Mr. Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I have my staff, Michaela Anderson, here to present the Department of Labor Finance Budget Subcommittee Narrative Report. Thank you.
Thank you. For the record, Michaela Anderson, staff to Representative Tomaszewski. The House Finance Budget Subcommittee for Department of Labor and Workforce Development held a total of 5 meetings and submits the following recommended operating budget for FY24 to the House Finance Committee. In fund sources, unrestricted general funds, $20,989,400. In designated general funds, $29,525,300. Other funds, $15,638,200. And federal funds, $90,587,500, for a total of $156,740,400. Compared to FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent increases in unrestricted general funds of $320,000 or 1.5%, an increase in federal funds of $7,890,500 or 9.5%, and then decreases in designated general funds of $6,309,900 or 17.6%, and other funds $871,400 or 4.3%, for a total increase of $1,029,200 or 0.7% of all funds. As far as positions, permanent full-time 664, permanent part-time 44, temporary 24, for a total of 732. After reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all but one item by unanimous consent. Some of the highlights to these items are increase to AvTech, or Alaska Vocational Technical Center, 250,000 UGF. This is an increase related to adjunct instructors to remain competitive in their similar fields. A fund change for Alaska Vocational Technical Center from GF program receipts to GF of $320,000, This is to increase spending ability due to the ceiling of revenue capturing from class fees, restore omnibus workers' compensation from HB 79 from 2018, $400,000 in second injury fund. This is to correct a previous year's decrement. The program has been sunsetted and will not be accepting more claims, but we'll be seeing current claims through to fruition. And then the one item that was rejected was a technical change to duplicative one-time funding of unemployment insurance of $10 million in federal receipts. There was a one-time increment of $10 million in federal authority to the UI previously. The funding of $10 million was funded as zero multiplier to effectively reject it and correct the duplicative mistake. The department is requesting $6.3 million in federal authority this upcoming fiscal year, essentially a $3.6 million decrease. The committee also accepted one amendment, which was the only amendment that was offered, as intent language, stating it is the intent of the legislature that the Department of Labor and Workforce Development leverage federal apprenticeship dollars to increase state capacity and expanding career technical education. All amendments were welcome, but we just received that one. And there are four documents in the report. The agency totals, the adjusted base to House Subcommittee Transaction Compare, the FY24 Government to House Subcommittee Transaction Compare, and Wardage, as well as the BA sheet.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Through the chair, I just noticed that this is the one budget where there are fewer increases than others. So other budgets have anywhere between 3 and 11% increase, if not more, and this one is 0.7% increase. I just wondered if there was any discussion around trying to make sure to keep this level. I know we want to grow our workforce, and maybe that is why the intent language was added as an amendment, that if there were more federal receipts, it would go toward CTE.
So, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Galvin, it is my understanding that the department tried to keep their budget relatively even. So while they had that $250,000 increase to AvTech, there was a $250,000 general fund decrease, fund source change to wage and hour, to replace it with general fund program receipts so that there was a GF, it was equal and balanced there. The department does know that that is the intent of the subcommittee, so if there are more federal dollars, they'll try to go after those, but they already do that.
Thank you. Right. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. I'm curious because a couple of years ago, we cut from their budget some inspectors, a plumbing inspector, electrical inspector, a boiler maker, I can't remember what the phrasing, but it's in those systems. Was there any discussion of adding any of those inspector positions back? Because I've heard from industry that we can't keep up with the inspections, and these are all for commercial buildings, and so if you can't get the inspection done, you got to sit and wait. And wondering if there were any discussions around that from the department of what their time to do those inspections in places that require them are.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, in subcommittee, there was no discussion in subcommittee of those inspectors. When there was a question, the department did respond that a electrical inspector in Fairbanks and a boiler inspector in Juneau would make the biggest impact to their backlogs. But there was not an amendment offered to implement those two positions.
Thank you.
All right, is there, seeing no additional questions, would you like to make a final statement on the Department of Labor?
No, I just appreciate all the subcommittee work on all my subcommittees and my staff for doing such a good job. So that's
very, very good. Moving on, now we are still with Representative Tomaszewski, who will be next up will be presenting the subcommittee report on the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. go ahead and put yourself on the record and begin your presentation.
Okay, thank you, Madam Co-Chair Johnson, through the Chair, Representative Frank Tomaszewski, and this is the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, House Finance Budget Subcommittee Narrative Report. And my report will be given by my staff, Michaela Anderson.
Thank you. For the record, Michaela Anderson, staff to Representative Tomaszewski. For sake of titles, we'll call this DOT. The House Finance Budget Committee for DOT held a total of 8 meetings and submits the following recommended operating budget for the FY24 House Finance Committee. In fund sources, UGF, $154,450,000. DGF, $62,776,800. Other funds, $442,420,600. Federal funds, $95,975,000. For a total of $755,402,400. Compared to the FY24 adjusted base, the subcommittee recommendations represent an increase of $14,538,900, or 10.4%, in UGF, $13,654,600, or 27.8% of DGF, $13,299,500, or 3.1% in other funds, and a decrease of $8,555,300, or 8.2% in federal funds, for a total increase of $32,935,700, or 4.6% of all funds. There are a total of 3,422 positions, made up of 2,987 permanent full-time positions, 287 permanent part-time positions, and 148 temporary positions. After reviewing and discussing each of the governor's proposed transactions in detail, the subcommittee adopted all items by unanimous consent. There were no increases or decreases. After the chair set an amendment deadline and welcomed all amendments from all members, the committee received no amendments. Some of the highlights of these items that were accepted are commodity increases in all three regions to adjust for inflation, totaling $1,334,900 of UGF. A two-week on, two-week-off schedule for Dalton district shift changes, equaling $1,298,600. This schedule has been implemented since 2020, utilizing federal COVID funds. The department saw less vacancies with this schedule and is continuing the practice but switching to UGF. Wayside improvements in central and northern regions, equaling $385,000 UGF. Silvertip, Birch Lake, and Chittenden maintenance station operations, equaling $1,414,600 UGF. Ice road maintenance, equaling $200,000. And Alaska Marine Highway operating budget increases of $13,847,000 of DGF. And the included reports with this are the DOT agency totals, DOT transaction compare adjusted base, the House subcommittee, wordage, and the BA sheet.
Representative Hannon, and
thank
then
you,
Representative
Chair.
Ortiz.
Thank you, Chair Johnson. Ms. Anderson, the Silvertip, Birch Lake, and Chittenden maintenance stations, my recollection is that we funded those last year, and so I'm curious why... Did we underfund them and they need additional money, or were they, like the two-week-on, two-week-off Dalton, were they in federal monies and we need to replace that with UGF?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, they were, it's my understanding they were done with the federal COVID money and now they're being moved to UGF and added to the base.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Ortiz.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair, through the chair. Under your recommendations column, you have the other funds at $442 million. Into this, what goes into the other funds in relationship to get that high of a number?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the majority of those other funds, as far as I was reading through, are international airport funds. So the international airports, Ted Stevens and Fairbanks International Airport, are doing big changes, both from everything from cybersecurity to laptops to mission critical pay to whatever you can think of. They're doing a major overhaul, and all of those funds, they pay for themselves because they're international airport funds, but we have to show them in the budget. So I can get you the specific amount of international airport if you'd like.
Follow up. Different category. Under some of the highlights of these items are down there, Alaska Marine Highway. Of course, I was going to ask about that. Operating budget increase, $13,847,000 DGF. Marine Highway Operating Fund, is that the source of that DGF, or do you know?
Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, I don't have that at the top of my head, which one of the funds. But we do have our LFD analyst in the room, if you'd like.
Sure, and I have one more follow-up, too, with this.
All right. I'm sorry. I think I missed a beat there. Would you like to?
I would like to have Michael Partlow come up to throw a lifeline.
All right. Very good. And I believe he's the analyst for the Department of Transportation from a legislative finance. Welcome to House Finance. And you would put yourself on the record and then answer or ask if you need clarification.
For the record, Michael Partlow, fiscal analyst for the Department of Transportation for Legislative Finance. Through the chair, Representative Ortiz, the increase to the Alaska Marine Highway is funded through the Alaska Marine Highway Fund, the designated general fund.
Okay.
Very good.
And in fairness to the department, we were notified, the state was notified of some significant increase from marine highway funding from the federal government in the area of $285 million, I think. Some of that, I think, can be used for operations. Some of it can be used for capital improvements, ships of repair, et cetera. My question is, with that $285 million, there's a match requirement. Did you guys, I can't remember, I was sitting in on the committee as well, have we addressed the issue, and is the issue of match now highlighted in the budget, or are we still waiting for how that's been all going to work?
I can go ahead and answer that unless you have an answer first. I don't believe that that's in this subcommittee budget, but it's certainly on our radar. And we don't know exactly the match quite yet, but we want to make sure that we're not caught short.
So you mean the source of the match?
What's that?
You mean the source of the match? We're not sure of the source of the match?
We don't know how much the match will have to be, but we want to make sure that we, or even if we're going to actually, how it's going to have to be. But we're aware of it, and we don't want to be caught short on that, so it's on our radar.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you very much. Seeing no additional questions, thank you, Representative Tomaszewski and your staff. Thank you to Legislative Finance and for the reports and all the work that I know that Legislative Finance has done. It is not quite finished yet. We will be wrapping up our closeout reports this afternoon. And our next meeting, I guess I don't know if I gave Mr. Representative Tomaszewski a moment to, I think, did you get to finish up your final closeout comments? I'm not quite sure that you got to do that.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, bad leg. No, I just appreciate my staff and all the hard work that the committees did. And one more thing to Representative Ortiz is that absolutely are looking at the utilizing all of those federal funds, and we will be looking at those matches and utilizing every dollar of federal funding that we can for that marine highway system. So
glad to hear. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. So we aren't quite finished, but we've made quite a lot of progress today. Our next meeting, this wraps up our closeout reports for this afternoon. Our next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, March 14th at 9 a.m. At that meeting, we will be hearing closeout reports from the Department of Family and Community Services, Department of Health, the University of Alaska, Department of Commerce and Community and Economic Development, Department of Corrections, Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, the governor, the legislature, and finally the Department of Revenue. And with no additional subcommittee reports or additional business before the committee, at 2:43, we are adjourned.